Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
It's always really good to have a tune-up of your copy in all phases of your marketing funnel or across your social media channels, and try and figure out what is it that really grabs your readers' attention. Because I often find that when you go back to that original messaging and get that right, absolutely nail that, then it, you know, it comes across as compelling no matter what platform, you know, platform you're on, because there are so many different places where, you know, where we write our words and where we need to craft really great copy. So it's just about figuring out what is that connection point, what's going to grab their attention and hold it. You know, and if you're hitting all of those points in the right way, which is, you know, it's pretty simple. It's usually a combination of their pain points, their problems, their desires, their aspirations, and then setting yourself up as the person that provides the solution, you know, the really magnetic solution, then you're going to be kind of getting some momentum with your marketing and your sales.
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust also that you enjoyed my recent conversations with David Smulders of BitQ and with Dr. Amantha Imber of Inventium. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Jackie Jubb, who's a copywriter and a launch strategist. Jackie is a lawyer turned copywriter and writing mentor who helps people express their creative genius and launch their signature program into the world. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, my business, InnovaBiz. We help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal clients. The result is that their ideal clients virtually self-select and line up to work with them. To help you get real clarity about who your ideal client is and how you can build a strong, enduring relationship with them, take a look at our Marketing Master mini class. It's just two modules and will take less than 30 minutes to work through, and it's free, but it will give you total clarity on your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. You can even use the exercise to define your ideal audience for a podcast, a speech, or a presentation. Access the Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. As I said, it's completely free, and you don't even have to give away your email to get access. In our discussion today, Jackie talked to me about her tips to write a good headline that gets people reading further. She explained how to engage your dream client with personality-infused copy. And she described ways to use storytelling in your copy. So without further ado, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Jackie Jubb. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from the central coast of New South Wales in Australia, Jackie Jubb, who's a copywriter and a launch strategist. Welcome to the podcast, Jackie. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Thanks so much, Jürgen. I'm thrilled to be here.
Now, Jackie, you help business owners, coaches, consultants, and creatives make money with words and launch their signature online courses, so they can change from a typical one-to-one service that many of them might be in to a one-to-many and create the impact and the freedom that they probably imagined when they started their business. So that's something that I'm really keen to learn more about. But I know you're also a lawyer, that you've worked previously as a prosecutor and a business lawyer, and then you left the world of law when you first became a mother and started your copywriting business. I know you're also a talented actress, a wedding singer in another life. You're a big fan of musical theatre. And you describe yourself as a copywriter, marketer, lawyer, online course creator, incessant dancer, freedom chaser. So it'd be interesting to hear some more about that as well. But today I'd really like to explore your thoughts on copywriting and marketing and online courses. So first thing, what exactly do you do today and why do you do it?
So today what I really do is I write words that get results for clients. And what that means is I write the words that win the hearts and the business of their dream client. And that, you know, that happens in a number of ways. I write a lot of conversion copy, you know, sales copy and email marketing copy that engages with your ideal audience. And I help my, you know, I work with a lot of coaches, consultants and service providers to finally launch their, you know, their flagship or their signature program. So that they can have an additional revenue stream, additional to their one-on-one service business, professional service business, and so they can really kind of scale their business and take it to the next level. And a lot of times I find that when my clients come to me, they already have a business, they've got reasonable sales, they have momentum, but they're either struggling to articulate what they do in a really compelling way, or they've simply hit that, you know, trading dollars for hours time cap, where, you know, they either have to price their services at a much higher rate or stop taking business. You know, they're too busy in their business and they need to find another way to scale their business. So that's when they come to me and I help them with their copy and their marketing.
Mm. All right. And so I'm curious, how did you kind of transition from that, or it doesn't seem to be an obvious transition from the legal profession to copywriting, although I know in the legal profession you probably have to have excellent command of language, but, you know, how did you decide to transition into that?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think a lot of lawyers do have these transitions into creative careers because they're all, you know, frustrated actors and writers and from a very young age. I think if you talk to most barristers, you know, will often have some sort of side gig or side hustle or side dream going on. But really, I mean, I was always good with words. And, you know, the copywriting training came later, but I was always, you know, the girl who won the English prize and the girl who wrote all the stories and, you know, even later in my professional life as a lawyer, I was the one who checked everyone's emails to make sure the language was right and it was articulated in the right way. So I was always that that wordsmith. And, you know, for years, even while I was a lawyer, I was always writing on the side. And, you know, I eventually, when I had my first daughter, I decided that I really wanted to give it copywriting a good go because I dabbled in that as well. And so I decided to write for some publications for free, and I worked for a newspaper in Bowral, a Fairfax publication in the south of Sydney. I did a week's work experience there in my early 30s for free and kind of tried to hone my journalistic skills, and I did some writing for a not-for-profit bridal magazine. I did all sorts of things to actually transition into the world of writing while I was still a professional lawyer. And eventually I ended up doing a year in an advertising agency in Sydney where I really learned the ropes of copywriting and learned copywriting skills. And I decided that I really enjoyed it. I loved having creative clients. I loved the interaction with business and I loved, you know, marketing writing. I really loved diving into, you know, people's message and what they were trying to get out into the world and what they were trying to express. So, and I realized I really loved doing sales copy as well, which came later. But yeah, it started out with a love of words and it kind of segued into copywriting after trying a number of other different types of writing. Because I think, you know, when people think about writing, you know, I'm not sure that copywriting was the first thing that comes to mind as being quite a creative pursuit. I sort of thought, oh, maybe copywriting is boring business writing. That's what I originally thought about it. Mm. And I thought, you know, I'll try journalism and maybe some feature writing, or I'll write a children's book. You know, I kind of dabbled in a few different things. But I eventually, you know, came to realize that I was particularly interested in business, and that it was that business is, you know, inherently creative, and that I loved writing for all manner of businesses, you know, creatives, lawyers, accountants, interior designers, all sorts of professional service providers, people in the health and wellness profession. I really loved diving into and understanding different industries and trying to, you know, articulate what they do in a really engaging way. So I did all sorts of online copywriting courses. I had a, you know, mentor at a Sydney advertising agency who was a very skilled copywriter and taught me the ropes. And that's how I sort of ended up in the copywriting world. But it certainly wasn't a fast transition. It was a bit of a slow burn. It took me a while to really land in this space. And I think, you know, the legal experience really comes into play because, you know, it's about the art of persuasion. When you're standing in a courtroom and you're making an argument, you have to persuade the judge to agree with your view. And it's the same thing with copywriting. It's the art of persuasion. You need to write persuasive, personality infused copy that has them thinking, you know, that you are inside their head, and you almost understand them better than they understand themselves. And that's what great copy is. So, you know, I think the link for me is that art of persuasion, and I sort of learned that, you know, in courtrooms, and I've taken it to the page later in life.
Yeah, well, you said a couple of things there that really struck a chord with me and resonated, and that was, you know, around what makes good copy, which is one of the questions I've got on my bullet list here, but I'll come back to that in a moment, because I think one of the important points, you mentioned copywriting is, you know, people kind of see it as perhaps not creative or anything, but then if you consider a post on social media or a video that somebody puts out as part of their marketing or as part of their education of their audience, or if you think about this podcast, there's copy that goes into this podcast. I mean, essentially the words that we use in putting together an article, a blog post, a video, an audio, you know, the script that goes behind that, or a post on social media, all of that is copy, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I've said this to clients before, but words are everywhere, you know, and your copy is the biggest factor in ultimately whether your customers or your prospects, you know, buy your product or whether they go and choose to buy, you know, a competitor's product. You know, there are other factors that go into it, like the design and the funnel and all sorts of things, but really ultimately if your sales are suffering or you're feeling like they're a bit stagnant, you know, it's always really good to have a tune-up of your copy in all phases of your marketing funnel or across your social media channels, and try and figure out what is it that really grabs your reader's attention. Because I often find that when you go back to that original messaging and get that right, absolutely nail that, then, it comes across as compelling no matter what platform you're on, because there are so many different places where, you know, where we write our words and where we need to craft really great copy. So it's just about figuring out what is that connection point, what's going to grab their attention and hold it, and if you're hitting all of those points in the right way, which is, you know, it's pretty simple, it's usually a combination of their pain points, their problems, their desires, their aspirations, and then setting yourself up as the person that provides the solution, the really magnetic solution, then you're going to be kind of getting some momentum with your marketing and your sales.
Yeah. Now, you said something earlier about engaging the dream client, and you also talked about infusing the copy with personality, so with your personality, if it's your copy. And the other thing in that was engaging with the ideal client. So I think to me they're all really important things. So tell us a little bit more. How do you go about doing those three things?
So I think you probably really the best place to start is really understanding your audience. And A lot of the time, we've all heard of doing the ideal client avatar or the profile or the buyer persona, actually creating that picture of what our client looks like. And I think sometimes we don't spend enough time in that space really going to the places where they actually are and where they're expressing their concerns, their needs, their problems. And that would be different for depending on what type of business you have. They may not all be sitting in Facebook groups and communities or on platforms like LinkedIn. You really need to understand, firstly, where do they hang out? Where do they communicate their problems and their needs? And then really do some market research and engagement around what they're suffering from, what problem they're suffering from. You can also do some kind of message or data mining on the internet, go to forums, find out what people are posting questions about, and really understand where their head is at. And that goes a lot further than, what their eye color is or, what they do on a weekend. I mean, obviously I do encourage people to speak to a specific person when they're writing because it does make it more effective. But I think really, understanding them in a really in-depth way is the very first starting point, because if you don't really have an understanding of what they want, what they need, what keeps them up at 2 a.m., what point they want to get to in their business and how you can meet them at that point, then, your copy is going to fall flat.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, and it's quite amazing the power of that. I'm a huge fan of empathy mapping. So we do a lot of ideal client work. In fact, I did a whole day's workshop yesterday with one of my clients, and we really focused in on ideal client again. I'd done this exercise with him before, but I still had this sense of a lack of focus a little bit. So the empathy map really gets to some of those things. So we go to the next level beyond, what are the demographics of the ideal client, and I like to take the approach of let's pick your favorite client right now and clone them, because then you've got a reasonably good idea, hopefully, of what makes them tick and what some of their frustrations and challenges and pain points are and what their aspirations are. So we kind of work on that through the empathy map. And in doing that exercise, to me, I have so many aha moments in that, even working on somebody else's ideal client. But, of course, one of the questions I ask in that exercise sort of as we're going through it is, okay, who's that person's ideal client? So do you know what their ideal client is and what their ideal – how you can help them serve their ideal client, which, of course, is what I'm doing in that exercise for my client. So – And the power of that exercise and the focus and the things that uncovers that then gives you material to produce information that then forms the basis of the copy that you'll write is amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's so powerful. And interestingly, because we're kind of both working with business coaches and consultants and, and service providers, sometimes that ideal client will be similar to you, but perhaps in an earlier phase of their journey. It's not always the case. That sometimes it does, if you're struggling to articulate it, sometimes it may be that they are, in a different buying phase. Perhaps they're in the startup phase of their journey or in the early growth phase or, the scale-up phase. But sometimes they are just, similar to you in an earlier phase of your business. So sometimes you need to look there, depending on what industry, you work in. But that can often happen in the coaching and consulting space, that you are coaching and consulting other coaches who are, perhaps not quite as advanced as you are, and you have the tools and the skills and the mindset to help them make a transformation in their business. So,
One of my recent guests, she takes the approach of often you are your own ideal client because in our case, we help clients set up podcasts and we produce podcasts for clients. Now, in developing all the skills that we use, we put to use there, we did that because we had that need to produce this podcast. And so if you look back to when I started this podcast, I was the ideal client for that service because that's why I developed the service. And I thought that's a really brilliant way to look at it. If you're actually taking something you've learnt and you've built a business around and sharing that with others by way of training or coaching.
Exactly. I mean, I think I've been the same in my business. I think I probably am my ideal client as well. Yeah. I have a couple, but, you know, I do love helping other entrepreneurs and female entrepreneurs and business owners, kind of take their business to the next level and move out of a survive mode into a thrive mode and you know, have all of the copy and marketing and content creation in place to do that. And getting them to kind of show up consistently with their content and have a plan around it is really important too. So there's that, you know, there's that mentoring aspect of making sure that you implement things in your business to get to that point. Yeah, but it's true. Often you need to look right into the need to look in the mirror to get a really good understanding of your ideal ideal audience.
Now, in terms of the engagement part and infusing personality, what's your approach there? Because obviously, you know, you can write words that are on paper and people read it and analyze it and say, yes, I think that's what I need. But then if they're not engaged, if they're not compelled to take action as the next step, it kind of still falls flat, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I really think the show, not tell principle in terms of storytelling and infusing personality into copy is one of the best ways I find to look at it. And that's not just, you know, simply saying, you know, I help clients do this, you know, achieve a certain result. Tell the story, you know, it's just launch into a story, you know, about, you know, Gary was 35 years old and he only had, you know, two or three clients coming through the door and he had a problem with cash flow, you know, and then paint the picture of Gary's life and then show where you came in to help Gary solve that problem, because people are inherently interested in other people and they want to see themselves reflected. You know, they'll see some aspect of themselves reflected in that story, because ultimately we are interested in ourselves and our own problems. So, you know, the best way to do it is to do the show, not tell approach. So don't tell them obviously you want to be clear about what you do, but don't tell them what you do. Show them what you do, and show it by telling an engaging story that might be about you, that might be about a client, depending on the particular situation. Or just you may have observed something in your daily life which is, you know, inherently interesting and also offers them a unique perspective on what you do and the kind of value you can bring to their lives. But the show, not tell principle is what I think is useful to think of when you're sitting down to write copy. I know that's the word storytelling and stories is used a lot, but it does come down to actually telling a story about, you know, how you've helped someone solve a problem, or not, you don't have to do that every single time. Sometimes you might just have an entertaining piece which is not designed to be educational, you know, every single time. That's particularly with email marketing. The show not tell principle is where I start with clients about drawing those stories out of their own life and also using those client stories in an interesting way to grab people's attention and bring that human connection to the marketing. Yeah,
that's good advice. And I've seen that used really well by lots of people, particularly in emails that go out to their email list. And I understand, I mean, I told a story earlier about the client I worked with yesterday, and I could probably elaborate on that and give an example. You know, this is how we work with clients. This is what happened yesterday. Here's the outcome. This is the result. And then people can look at that and say, well, that's what I need, and that's the result I want. And so I can see the connection there. What I'm curious about is the other part, because, first of all, how do you make something like that entertaining from the headline where you want to capture people's attention to the point that they actually read the whole thing, that it's entertaining enough for them to spend time on, as well as, you know, understand, okay, this is what is a possible outcome for me as well. And the second question, I guess, is how do you
take the second type of stories you mentioned about that might not be related to a case study, if you like, but could be purely entertainment. How do you take those and make them add value in a way that, hey, here's a lesson out of that? So, you know, this happened to me yesterday. This is a consequence or lesson I took out of that. So think about that lesson. Or can you do that as a metaphor for something else?
Yeah, I mean, I'll use an example of what an email I sent to my list recently to kind of encapsulate the approach that I take. I often attract multi-passionates, obviously, because I'm sort of a lawyer in many different areas turned copywriter and business mentor. And, you know, sometimes they struggle with making decisions about where to go with their messaging, what direction to take with their business, you know, what to let go and what to, you know, actually get stuck into. And so I thought, well, it's not really an email about copywriting I want to send. It's just an email about decision making. So how am I going to make that interesting and entertaining and just, you know, maybe there's a bit of a lesson at the end of it. So I did tell a story about my own life, and what I did in the headline, in terms of if we're talking about hooks and headlines and making it entertaining, is I had a bit of an open loop. So, you know, I used phrases in the headline which mean, you know, you're going to want to make them open the email because they don't know everything about what that means. For example, I said missed law exams, NIDA auditions and sliding doors. So, and then dot, dot, dot. So, you know, leaving an open loop in a headline is a really great tool to use if you want to keep them interested. You know, if you answer the question in the headline, there's absolutely no reason for them to open the email. So, you know, a boring statement, a statement which already says, you know, here's five tips on how to blah. You know, sometimes those headlines just aren't enough to get people to want to read more and take time out of their very busy day or open an email in their already crowded inbox and give the email the attention, you know, it deserves. So open loop headlines I think are really good, you know, sometimes controversial. Headlines with a bit of a promise, like promising that they'll get something if they open up and read, are great. And in terms of the, you know, telling a story with a bit of a lesson at the end and an email which is just entertaining, you know, alluding to what you're writing about but still being a bit mysterious in the headline, I think always is a great way of getting them to open the email. And then I proceeded to tell the story about, you know, it was 1999. I was a Sydney University student. We were drinking beers in bars and, you know, marching in protests for world peace. And, you know, and I had two choices on my 21st birthday. I had to either turn up to my law exam or I turn up to my NIDA audition, which I studied for because I wanted to be an actress as well.
And just for those people that are not in Australia, the NIDA is the premier Arts and Entertainment Academy in Australia, right?
Yeah, so it's a, you know, prestigious acting school that only a handful of people get accepted into every year. And I had I had studied for it, and I had my auntie's an actress, and we'd rehearsed monologues and scripts, and I was ready to go. And I had a law exam on the same day that I was not able to reschedule. I'd asked for it to be rescheduled, and they said no. So, you know, it was my 21st birthday and I was in this sliding doors kind of moment, you know, where Gwyneth Paltrow decides to step on the train or not in that movie, you know. So I told that story and I sort of didn't really get to the lesson, I guess, or the value until right down at the end of the email, you know, where I said, you know, have you had any sliding doors moments? Are there any moments in which, you know, you've struggled to make a decision and your life's taken a particular direction because of that moment? Now, I got really good engagement from that email, and I think probably it was just because I told the story, you know, I used language, very conversational language, you know, in my own style, and we can talk more about how to find your, you know, your tone of voice and your style as well in your language. It was maybe one or two lines at the end where I kind of asked for a bit of, you know, feedback from my readers and also talked about the fact that, you know, it can be difficult to make decisions when we're you know, when we have all of these decisions in front of us and we're multi-passionate and, you know, what do you do in those moments? you know, and so I guess, you know, the storytelling from the outset, speaking in your own natural conversational voice, having a headline which makes them want to open it, what makes them want to read more, so leaving a bit of an open loop or some mystery in the headline. And then, you know, offering some value or the lesson perhaps, you know, towards the end of the email. But you don't have to do that every time. I think sometimes you can just send a really interesting, entertaining story and not it doesn't have to result in a particular lesson. Sometimes that can be a good circuit breaker with copywriting. Yep. You know, if you're always sending emails with your marketing message infused into everyone, sometimes just break it up and tell a story, tell a funny story, tell an interesting story, ask them to hit reply, you know, and get them to tell you a story, you know. So I think it doesn't always have to result in a kind of moral lesson or business lesson at the end of each piece of communication. Yeah.
That's really good point, and I think the point you made about adding value is really important. You know, even if you're not asking people to buy something or take some action to get in touch with you, that might be part of your engagement strategy. If it's just purely that circuit breaker that you mentioned, to add value at all times is, I think, really key.
I think sometimes you just have to have a strategy around, whether it was sometimes you might have the soft call to action, sometimes you might be directly selling, but then you mix that up with actually, you know, offering value, entertaining them, educating them, and then not asking, obviously not asking for the sale or not asking for a particular step in every single, particularly in, I do a lot of email marketing for clients, in email communication.
All right. Well, thanks for those tips. That's really valuable insights. Now, one of the things about stories that I'm curious about, you know, you talked about a personal story there, and I did read that, and I was, you know, I was attracted to the headline, although I was doing some research on you, so I was, you know, motivated to read it anyway. But it definitely, you know, that personal story, and it was engaging, and it's something that I think everybody can relate to, because I'm sure everybody's had moments like that where, you know, they're faced with a choice that's restrictive in the sense that they can't have both. They can't have their cake and eat it, to use overused phrase. And so they have to make a choice, one or the other. And then often you get to the point of saying, well, I wonder what would have happened if I had have chosen the other thing. So that's the sliding doors moment. And I think you talked about not having regret over that, and you're glad that you did make that choice, which is, you know, something. So there's a bit of a lesson for me in that you're kind of telling people, you know, don't fret too much over these things and because you've made the choice and you can't go back and change the choice, unlike the movie.
Exactly.
So I really like that. But I guess the question I have around stories, and this is something I struggle with a little bit, because I do stories in my other podcast, and I'm always looking for some personal stories, and I guess I'm always looking for something that's unique or different. Now, things happen to me every day, of course, and so there's probably a story every day, but unless it stands out, unless it's out of the ordinary, I don't kind of, my mind doesn't capture it as, here's a story I want to share with people. And so often I kind of think, what am I going to talk about this week? And then there's this issue of, if I force myself to put something out there, the quality's not going to be as good, and I don't want the quality to be bad. So, you know, do you always use personal stories in that situation, or can you use other stories? So I know that I recently was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about storytelling, and they were using, you know, Grimm's fairy tales. The Three Bears and Goldilocks, and to use that as kind of the metaphor for the lesson that they were putting forward.
I always find and mine stories from all sorts of places, because, you know, you might not always, as you say, feel inspired to write, you know, a fascinating story about your own life, or you might think, although I do find some of the most extraordinary stories are found in those humdrum moments, but, you can just think about a book you've read, a movie you've watched. You might have read a really interesting article about another business owner or entrepreneur's struggle or journey where you identify with one particular thing that they have gone through. And that's quite likely that, you know, the market that you're serving will identify with the same kind of daily struggle or business issue, or find something amusing if it's entertaining in that particular story. So, you know, even just reading the newspaper, jumping online and reading about stories about people in your industry or in another industry. You know, even last night, on Monday night, I was watching a show, I think it was the 7:30 report, so an Australian news report on television, and they were interviewing some farmers who were doing it really tough because obviously in Australia right now, you know, as you know, there's a lot of drought and the rural communities are suffering. And it made me think about, and I thought, oh, I could write a story about money. But they said that the farmer said, you know, wealth is, when he's asked about money and wealth and what it means to them, they said, well, wealth is being able to do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it. And right now we can't do that. And I just thought that was an interesting phrase that caught my attention. And I've been having some discussions with clients about, you know, pricing and money mindset and all sorts of things around the concept of wealth and how we define success. And so I haven't written a story about it yet, but I plan to. And that was the trigger for me to maybe write an article about how we perceive money and what kind of money we want to make in our businesses and what does that enable us to do for our families, for our life? How does that enable us to then have greater impact and influence and do those kind of create that legacy business, which is what a lot of us, you know, want to do, like create something that's kind of bigger than ourselves. So, you know, even just watching the news and just listening to that story triggered something for me. And I kind of have a long scrolling list in my iPhone, you know, my notes and my phone where I jot down these ideas. So, you know, it doesn't always have to be something from your own life. It could be, you know, you could even change the names. You could, or with their permission, you can use stories from your clients. You can look at the internet. You can look at the news. You know, you might be watching the latest Netflix series and something pops up in, you know, The Handmaid's Tale or whatever other show you might be watching, or even just, you know, an interview that you see on TV can often spark something for you. So, you know, kind of always be thinking about. For me, it's always thinking about, well, what does go through our minds on a daily basis? And sometimes they're really boring thoughts, and sometimes they are really connected to, you know, the human struggles that we have as humans. You know, what is it that's difficult about maybe balancing parenthood and business life and or relationships with your friends? You know, what is it that you want to do more of but you don't have the time to do? So speaking to those kind of issues that arrive in people's daily lives is a great way to just, you know, get those juices flowing in terms of storytelling. And, you know, and it depends, you know, some of my clients really like to, and I do this as well, like to batch content. It's not for everyone, but, you know, sometimes when you're in the zone and you turn off your, switch off your emails or put your out of office on and have a day where you get creative and maybe get outside or go to a different space to inspire you, and you start writing, then sometimes, you know, things flow more easily, and you can kind of come back to the notes that you make, you know, over the last month, which I do, notes from various shows and books and situations, and then you can start to write stories or, you know, map out stories around those trigger points.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's given me a much better insight. So, like you say, it's often there's things that we may at first glance see as trivial, but there, you know, there might be something in that you could write some more about, because it does highlight a struggle or an issue that people deal with in general. And I guess it's about making the connections, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like people, because most people really, I mean, most people want to to live, you know, a life where they have, you know, freedom, where they have, you know, the time to do the things that they want to do, to spend time with their loved ones, pursue an interesting career, have purpose, you know, explore their passion. I mean, we all have kind of similar desires and then similar kind of obstacles to reaching those desires. And sometimes it might just be a daily annoyance that highlights you know, what we want or what, or the struggle that we're facing, you know, that you weren't able to go for your morning jog, or the barista at your local cafe didn't make the right coffee and didn't care about it. Maybe that's a customer service lesson, I don't know, but there's always something where you can kind of make it interesting and then, you know, relate it back to your life or your audiences.
Well, I did once have a really weird and bad experience at a coffee shop. It prompted that in my mind, talking about the barista. And so I don't know why, but I, on my mind must have been customer lifetime value, and I ended up writing this whole article that still gets lots of engagement. It's probably about 5 years old now, but it's a timeless article talking about customer lifetime value. And I said, well, you know, there I was with two of my friend, or actually my daughter and one other friend, to get a coffee. So it was three cups of coffee, and the business owner treated us like dirt, really. So we're never going to go back to that place. But, you know, we actually ended up asking for our money back on the day, so that was like $12 perhaps. But I then said, well, you know, when you consider that, if, you know, if we had been treated well, we probably, because as bike riders, you tend to go and have a coffee with the group afterwards.
Yeah.
So I said, well, you know, it's not just that $12, because we ride every day. So if you multiply that by seven for the week, that becomes $84. And then on this particular day, there were only three of us. Some days in summer, there's 20 or 30 of us. And then, you know, we're most of those people are in that for the long haul. They're not just casual bike riders that go out for one bike ride. They kind of do it because they're passionate about it. So, you know, so if you look at that over a five-year time span, and I worked out the numbers, I did all the numbers, and it came sort of hundreds of thousands of dollars just for the coffee. And then I said, and, you know, then we have, like, we tend to have get-togethers where we get our partners and go and have a dinner together just to, you know, aside from the bike riding, to kind of strengthen the social interactions. And I said, and then you're looking at, you know, perhaps 40 people at $100 a head perhaps. So, and I worked that out, and I said, you know, that little decision to treat us like dirt on that day could, you know, could have cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, because they don't consider the longer term implications.
And you think about that, and you think about the ripple effect kind of from a branding perspective that they have missed, in terms of, you know, they could have made you raving fans of their business. You know, you could have been wildly singing the praises of this particular cafe and the experience you had, that has such a ripple effect, you know, word of mouth, referrals, community, kind of engaging everyone in, and sending people to their cafe. So it's also kind of a reputational and brand issue. And ultimately a bottom line thing. But, I had that the other day, actually. There's a cafe that I actually just last weekend, cafe that I won't go back to. They were very disinterested, and they only accepted cash, and then they made the worst coffee I think I've ever had. I had to throw it in the bin. So for all you coffee snobs out there, I appreciate that. But, I think, you know, and that's the thing. It's also about the customer experience. You know, when I talk to clients, I say, what is it? How can you make every touch point, you know, sort of surprising and delightful, and make it an amazing experience? Because it's just like a cafe that you go back to, where you have the, you know, the rapport with the barista, and things are buzzing, and they remember your name, or they remember your coffee. And it's exactly the same in business. You know, it's just about relationships and creating a really extraordinary experience that makes them makes your customers want to come back. So you get that loyal repeat business. You know, you also get the referral work, and, you know, it's great from a brand perspective as well.
And of course, creating that amazing experience does start with the first touch point, which generally would be reading some information that you've put out there, which is where the copywriting comes in and is so important.
Yeah, exactly. And also making it real, it's so important to make it streamlined, you know, consistent across your channels, because when people are interested in you, they're going to go and check out your website. They might jump onto your LinkedIn. They'll sign up to your email list and start getting emails from you, and getting a real sense of who you are and what your business is all about. So important, the words that you write not only just resonate with your market, but are consistent across, you know, the various touch points and channels. So, copywriting is very important.
Now, you mentioned earlier about, you know, developing your own conversational style and your natural voice. So how do you suggest people go about that?
I like to tell clients to, you know, either create a little bit of a language or a brand guide at the beginning. I mean, it doesn't have to be this, you know, huge manifesto, but you do need to sit down and think about where you want your language to sit in terms of your own personal style, and also what your, you know, audience customers are looking for. And that might be just a simple list of, you know, what you are and what you are not. So, for example, you know, we're traditional, but we're not stuffy, you know, or we're sophisticated, but we're not kind of too elite, you know. When you start to kind of do that values based choosing of terms that define who you are, that'll start to help you work on your language. You know, you might be, you know, is swearing appropriate for your brand and your business? May not be. Your customers may love it, depending on what industry you're in. You know, is it too conversational? Do you still need to have a bit of a kind of sophisticated corporate vibe that just gets to the heart of the message every time, but isn't overly casual? So you do need to sit down and think about what words are you going to use, and what words would you never use, or would your customer not want to hear from you? You know, they may not want to hear cliches. Start to think about, you know, that, you know, how can you be original with your language as well? They may want you to have a really sort of trusted, be the trusted expert that they rely on. So how can you use language that, you know, sounds credible, doesn't sound too flighty, and is kind of consistent across the board? So I think sitting down and thinking about your values and just mapping out a mini sort of brand guide, which establishes, you know, what you stand for and what you don't stand for, is a really good starting point for, you know, a tone of voice and brand guide at the outset, before you start thinking about, you know, your copy and the purpose of each particular piece of communication.
That's a really good idea. So, of course, values and beliefs are, particularly values, people have kind of a lot of aspirational values, but they're not genuine. How do you deal with that when you're working with people?
In terms of how to get to the hub of their tone of voice, look, I think you know, there's when we start out, we often perhaps want to sound a certain way, but when you dig into the messaging, particularly of also who you're speaking to, not just your own personality, I think that you generally find it easier to hone into that tone of voice, because ultimately you have to start with thinking about your audience and not just your particular personality style. So, you know, most of the time I tell clients they really need to just write how they speak. I mean, that's ultimately what you need to do, because I think a lot of the time clients choose cleverness over clarity, and ultimately copywriting just needs to be clear. You know, if you're wavering and you're not sure what to say, just be really clear. Don't try and be clever. And actually, it's funny with tone of voice, because it evolves along the way, you know, and the best way to actually discover your tone of voice is through engagement, not thought. Like, it's actually through writing, engaging, and starting to lean into your messaging and how you want to write. Often it's actually not until we sit down to write that we start to find our true voice.
So,
actually, you know, the sort of engagement piece of piece of it is very important. You know, sitting down, writing, putting pen to paper and starting to get a feel for what your conversational or tone is the best way to do it.
Hmm. All right. So when you're writing for somebody else, how do you capture their tone of voice and their style?
So there are a few things that I do. I do sit down and have a strategy session with them, and I send them a brand and copywriting survey, which helps me to tap into their, you know, obviously what we do with our, you know, ideal client exercise, but tap into their desires, their history, their story, what matters to them. So we go through a fairly comprehensive process where to help me get an understanding of how to write in their voice. I often get them to show me, you know, examples from their own marketing, but also from other people's websites or marketing competitors, you know, people in different industries, what they love about a particular piece of copy and what they hate. And what they tell me they hate is really probably the most important, because it helps me kind of eliminate what, you know, a particular type of voice that just does not speak to them and is not in their personal style. And I think that exercise alone is actually usually really useful. And sometimes I'll get them to do some writing themselves and then do a bit of a review and editing process because I ultimately think everyone does have the ability to write, and it can be learned. It's something that can be taught, copywriting. And sometimes it's nice to have at least one piece of writing where they just put something on the page and do a bit of a brain dump so I can see kind of what thoughts come out and what words come out, and then we can go from there.
All right. Well, Jackie, I could go on talking copywriting and sort of engaging your ideal audience and getting that storytelling right for ages, but I'm aware of the time, so I think it's a good point to move on to our buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience, and who are primarily innovators and leaders in their fields, with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions that hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers to, including or adding to the insights that you've already given us, but getting everybody inspired to go and do something awesome today.
Perfect. Hit me.
So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Find the silence. I feel as though innovation, which is all about creativity essentially, can only truly come when you create some silence and some space in your diary, in your world, and mixing up your environment. So if you can find the silence away from social media, email, family commitments, if you can make that space, then that gives, you know, there's space for innovation to happen, to flourish.
That's great advice, and I've had, you know, variants of that advice from quite a number of guests, ranging from take time to daydream, to get out into nature and just don't take all your electronic devices with you and be alone and so on. So that's there's obviously a theme there. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
It's pretty similar, and it's actually more about just getting into a different space entirely, environment entirely. So any of the good ideas or products that I've had, there's two things. Changing up the environment, so going to an inspiring space somewhere totally different from my day-to-day office, home life, everything, is often where my great ideas around products and services happen. And secondly, working with a mentor. I mean, I worked with a copywriting mentor. I've worked with business coaches as well from time to time in my business. And I love the process of bouncing ideas off a mentor who, you know, can take a different perspective from me that I haven't seen. When I've got an idea for a product or service and we can really dig into it together, I love working with mentors in my own business. So those two things, you know, getting off-site and changing up the aesthetics of my environment, and then working with a mentor who can help me, look at the obstacles to innovation, but also help me kind of dig into what's really original about, you know, the idea or the product or service.
Okay, well, that's a couple of good points there. I think the working with a mentor and getting that external input is really valuable, and the first one is probably about creating the environment to allow you to, from inside, you come up with some thoughts and ideas. Now, do you have a favourite resource that you use a lot?
You know, I mean, I know there are a lot of tools and systems that I've used over the time, but honestly, my favourite tool for innovation is pen and paper. And obviously, I'm a copywriter, so and I'm a bit old-fashioned in that regard. You know, one of my favourite books is The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. You know, she's the American writer who recommends that you write the 3 pages every morning, your morning pages, as soon as you wake up. But your brain, and I'm pretty sure there's been some studies around this, but your brain it does act a little bit differently when you are writing. Using a pen and a paper as opposed to typing on a computer and looking at a screen. And it basically slows everything down, which is, I think, is good for innovation and creativity. It slows down your mind and I think gets you in a state where you are more open to fresh ideas and innovative ideas and thinking about positioning and doing things a little differently to what's been done before. So, for me, it's a bit of a circuit breaker and helps. That's my favourite innovation tool. I know that's a little simple for your
passion. Well, I love it because it's mine. Yeah, I'm probably as much a technophile as any technophile. I love technology and I love the shiny new toys and I'm always exploring what the latest one is and how it can add value. But I also have behind me on my sit-down desk where... That's the other desk that doesn't have all the computer and technology on it, and it just has a bunch of paper and it has a nice notebook and my Lamy Safari fountain pens, which I've had for about 30 years. So I'm dating myself here a little bit, but you can still buy those, by the way. They're really good. And I love using those to just write in the notebook when the mood takes me, yeah.
Do you find you think differently when you do that?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
What's your favourite tool? Innovation tool? Do you mind me asking?
The internet and YouTube, perhaps.
Yeah.
So I find
that's it. We're just information at our fingertips, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It's just this. It's so quick to get any information, and of course you have to filter it because obviously the ease of publishing stuff on the internet means there's. Lots of information there that is questionable as to accuracy and value. But for example, last weekend, so I love my coffee. I think we established that earlier in the conversation. Last weekend, I've got a coffee grinder, which actually belongs to my son, but he's moved out of the house and moved overseas, and he's left this one behind, and we've been using it. It's about 20 years old, but it's a really good quality coffee grinder. Now, there's a lever on the side where you dispense the coffee out from the tray that captures the grinds, and it was jamming, and it was sort of stuck, and I thought, something's broken in the mechanism there. I wonder if you can repair that, because this is a really expensive coffee grinder, and just to replace it for that is probably overkill. And I thought, I'll go and have a look on the internet, see. And of course, I found a YouTube video where a guy pulled one of these things apart, stripped it all down, replaced the mechanism of this particular lever that was giving me problems, and did some other things as well. But it meant that I pulled this whole thing apart just following the guide from that video with my tablet there beside me running the video.
Amazing.
Pulled it apart. It turned out that the lever bit just needed a proper clean out. It probably hadn't been cleaned in all the time it had been used. So I cleaned it all down. And my wife came in the middle of this operation and she said, oh, you're never going to get that thing back together again. It's in 1,000 pieces. I said, well, I've put down all the bits and pieces to all the screws and everything in exactly the order I pulled it out. So I know I've got to go backwards down that channel. And also I've got the video. So I actually, within half an hour, I cleaned this thing, pulled it apart, cleaned it, put it all back together again and solve the problem. And, you know, that's something
amazing,
that I probably wouldn't have even dared to touch without having that information. And you know, I could get that information just at the click of a mouse.
Yeah, click of a button. Exactly. It's amazing how we all survived before the internet. You know, every time I go to my husband and I go to a friend's wedding, he's always on YouTube watching a video about how to do a Windsor knot. and I'll be on YouTube maybe, like, you know, looking at a makeup video or, you know, how to braid my daughter's hair, because I'm terrible. I'm terrible at that stuff. I should be a lot better, but I'm not. So I wonder how – we must have just all turned up to the social functions looking messy. Perhaps everyone was in the same boat.
All right. Well, what's the best way you know of to keep a project or a client on track?
Look, I just think diary management is, you know, I use Asana, I use a project management tool in my business, which is fairly straightforward and simple. But for me, blocking out time in your client's diary to actually, as well as mentoring calls, but diary management specifically, to get things done and execute on their, you know, from my perspective, usually a content marketing plan and getting their content written and out into the world. It's actually just blocking out time in their diary and then doing check-in calls to make sure that they've actually done it. Because from a copywriting and writing perspective, a lot of people just don't follow through with their, you know, with their marketing and their emails and their copy, and it kind of just gets pushed down in the priority list because they're busy in their business.
Yeah.
So just actually blocking out the time, you know, as they say, if it's not scheduled, it's not real. Everything they want to get done, whether it's start a podcast, launch that course, you know, we block out time for the next few months to make sure that it gets done and work backwards from reverse engineer what needs to be done by looking at the outcome or the results they want to get to. So diary management and scheduling is really important.
Yeah, and what I love about using a diary in that manner also is that you don't, like, if you keep your calendar separate from your project management or your task list, then there's not a real risk. It's almost inevitable that you overestimate how much you can get done in a short time, because, you know, then suddenly you find, oh, I've got appointments, I have to do this, I've got, you know, some personal appointments, and your day fills up with all of those things, and your to-do list kind of just sits there and
you roll it over for another day. Yeah, it's true. A lot of the time the tasks that we set ourselves in project management platforms, they just don't translate into our diary, as you say. They they never make it there. So that's really important to actually block out.
Really good advice, And what's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Just capitalize on your story. You know, use your story. I think, you know, your own experience and your story is the only thing that you have that no one else does. You know, it sounds simple, but what is the special swirl of talent, expertise and life experience that you have that no one else has? You know, and start to think about your skill set, but also your life skills, what you've done in your personal and professional life that makes you interesting and different, and how that helps you, you know, solve your customer's problem. When you look at your story, your unique story, you know, that is your selling point, because there are a million marketers, business owners, coaches, consultants, service providers can do what you do. I mean, there's a lot of talented people in the world, but only you can own your story and use that to tap into your market and your customers' you know, issues and problems. And that's, you know, that's the one thing that is unique to you. And I think the second thing I'd say is that we've talked a lot about, you know, information. There is so much information available on the internet, which is amazing. But that means that it's really important to focus on transformation and not just information. So when you can provide it, when you can transform a client's life or business, then you really are incomparable in the marketplace, because you've offered them, you know, a new way of seeing things, doing things, making more money, whatever it is that they truly desire. you help them create that. And it's not just providing them with information, it's providing a transformation. So when you can do that, that's a really special thing.
Yeah, I really love that word. It's probably one of my favourite words. And in fact, it's the title of my other podcast is Tales of Marketing Transformation. And to me, having that impact on someone else is a huge driver for me, and it's a huge buzz for me. If I see that, you know, what I've done has contributed to a transformation in another person's business or in their life or whatever it might be, that's where I get my kind of buzz from every day.
Me too. Because that reward is something that keeps you motivated, keeps you going, and it goes beyond the money. I just had a client, an executive coach, you know, in Melbourne, and I helped her secure a multiple five-figure contract and a new client. And, you know, she was a startup, so she came to me with no clients. And, you know, the impact of actually helping her secure that contract has been huge. You know, she's a single mom with a daughter. It's, you know, it's really given her momentum. It's changed her financial status and the way she sees her business. So, you know, and for me, that's the greatest reward, you know, particularly being in this business and working with service providers and coaches and consultants is that transformation, because that's something that's, you know, makes you, kind of lights you up from within.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, thanks, Jackie. This has been really fabulous. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Now, where can people reach out to you and find out more about you and how you work, and maybe even say thank you for all that you've shared with us today?
Yeah, perfect. So you can go onto my website, which is jackiejubb.com. You can sign up to my list to receive emails from me if you want to hear more from me, or you can email me at hi@jackiejubb.com if you'd like to get in touch with me directly.
All right, and we'll have all the links in the show notes for this episode. Now, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation and in their field?
I would say stop looking around so much at what other people are doing. And I know that we all kind of, you know, we all understand what doing a SWOT analysis is, and, you know, we're looking at competitors in the marketplace because, you know, that's what we are trained to do as marketers. But, you know, watching what other people do on social media and online too much can really kill your innovation and creativity. So, you know, if you want to be kind of incomparable and iconic and do something different and innovative, try to be swimming out in that blue ocean on your own and try to get away from the red stuff. So stop looking around so much what other people are doing and what place or time or phase they are in their business, and focus on where you're at and how you can meet your audience exactly where you are.
Yeah, that's really good advice. I think a lot of people get hamstrung by looking at the competition and either trying to copy what they're doing or saying, oh, I could never be as good as that, and so they don't do anything. Exactly. And I think the last point you made there about meeting your audience as where they are and where you can help them, that's where I think the focus should be.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, finally then, Jackie, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Oh, I'd like you to interview Richard Everett. He is a business coach. And owner of a yoga company. He's quite a spiritual guy and a very interesting person. He's one of my clients. And I think you'd really he's all about transformation as well, but I think you'd really find it interesting to talk to him about his kind of worldview, and he's a very intuitive person. So I think that might be a good interview.
Sounds fascinating. So we'll get an introduction to Richard from you and invite him onto the podcast and have a chat to him as well.
Perfect. Very love that. I'll let him know. I just thought of him. I haven't told him yet.
All right. Perfect. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today, Jackie. I've really enjoyed this and learnt a lot and gained a lot of insights, particularly around storytelling and how to use stories from other people and perhaps even mundane stories. I think we've shared a few stories today. And I've really enjoyed it, and I'm sure that our listener will get a lot out of this as well. So I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Jürgen.
hope you enjoyed that engaging and informative conversation with Jackie and took something away from what she shared with us today. I love her message of capitalizing on your unique story and using that to bring value to your ideal audience. And of course, I loved all the tips on storytelling. I'm really keen to know what you took away from Jackie's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Jackie Jubb. That is JACQUIJUBB. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Jackie Jubb. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Jackie there, as well as links to her website, her social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation, including her story about sliding doors. Jackie suggested we have a conversation with Richard Everett, the CEO of The Coaching People and of the Yoga Mat Company, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Richard, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Jackie Jubb. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible even without giving away your email. And yet, in less than 30 minutes, you'll get absolute clarity about who your ideal client is, what drives them, what their pain points are, what their aspirations are, and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery, or perhaps you want help with podcast production, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co, and we'll set up a quick call just to see if we're a good fit for one another. Tune in again next week to the InnovaBuzz podcast. We've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including Rebecca Lloyd of Rowboat and Mike Michalowicz, the author of Profit First. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.